You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and today we have a co-host with us. And my co-host today is Craigor Grosvenor. And Craigor has over two decades, he has been one of America's predominant public speakers and a financial counselor. He is an actor, he is a producer, and he's a syndicated television host. And he is also been a single parent, so he will be able to really touch on some of the subjects that we're going to be touching on today. And I think that all of us know that one of the greatest challenges and also opportunities as a person that we can face is raising a child, regardless of your profession or your status. Parents worldwide understand how difficult and how much of a blessing it can be to maintain a happy balance. Our guest today, Chris FSU, is an entrepreneur, marketing strategist, negotiations architect, speaker, and author of CDO, Chief Daddy Officer, The Business of Fatherhood, and he's also a radio talk show host. And Chris understands firsthand that the dynamics of success are the same, whether you're addressing a group at home or a group at work or tucking your child into bed at night. In the past 27 years, Chris has been at the heart of the strategic product introduction of more than 20 new products in the global pharmaceutical marketplace and engineered the turnaround of several others. But the story that I was most impressed with was that while building his first company, Chris found himself raising his then 7-year-old daughter as a single dad by applying his business knowledge to the business of parenting with equal dedication, adding that when he reflects on the 17 years of single parenting, he admires the person his daughter has become and rejoices in their relationship, considering it to be his crowning achievement. Chris, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you, Alan. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, I've had a chance to take a look at the book, and I've got to tell you, it really hits home. As I said in the very beginning, that all three of us here on the show today have all dealt with that, where we've found ourselves in a position as a dad raising a child. And from a societal standpoint, this is not necessarily the norm. I know that Craigor went through it, and he went through it many years ago.
Yes, I did. It was a great experience for me, obviously. I raised two boys, but I also raised two stepdaughters. So it was a lot of responsibility, but a lot of fun, too.
So, Chris, share with us what you mean about the fact that you raised your daughter using business principles.
Well, as you said earlier, Alan, I found myself building a company, and that time my marriage fell apart, and my daughter chose to live with me full time. Her mom moved out of state. So while I was very much engaged in my daughter's upbringing, almost while she was in utero, it's a very different thing to go from a dad that's basically hands-on before and after work to a dad that's hands-on 24/7, because now you've got to fill the mom and dad shoes, and that is a tall order. But every one of us, when we are faced with a difficult situation, we tend to fall back to what we know best, and what I knew best was business. And so I started applying some of the skills that I applied every minute of the day that I was at the office, such as planning, such as communication, such as negotiation, which came a little bit later, but that was a major aspect of my daughter's upbringing. Everything that happens in the business, including financial management, including leadership and respect for one another. I always believe that respect is earned, not given. And just because you're the older person, you probably deserve it on day one, much like your infant child deserves it on day one. But whether or not you as an adult or that as a child has it on day two, that is where it's earned. So I felt that if some things apply in business and there are hard and fast rules that we play by in business and no one will ever dispute them, why wouldn't they apply at home? Mm-hmm. And so I started little by little kind of putting some of those things in and evaluating them. And very much to my delight, things worked phenomenally well.
Now, Chris, what year did you find yourself in this position?
This was 1995. My daughter was 7 years old at the time. So she's 26 now. I can tell you that on the dark days that I have had, and I'm sure you jumped in my head as well, and you kind of scratched your head and you said to yourself, now I know I'm doing the best I can. I just hope that's good enough. And I hope that at some day this turns out to be the right way of raising a child. Never in my wildest dreams did I think that the payout was going to be what it is, what it was and what it continues to be. And so it's something that if you invest the time and the energy, you're going to reap the rewards, not unlike anything else in life.
Now, how did you deal with the fact that, I mean, in 1995, there was not a lot of fathers that were single parents, comparative to today? How did you deal with that, the fact that it really wasn't something that was a standard or a norm?
Well, it was, you're absolutely right. It wasn't the standard or the norm. And even though today it is much more accepted, it still is not the standard. I mean, you know, as late as 7-8 years ago, I used to have business partners kind of raising eyebrows, at the thought that I had just raised a daughter who now was in college at the time. So in my case was fairly simple. My ex-wife decided to move out of state and she announced that she was taking my daughter with her. And at the time I was on vacation with my daughter, and when I asked her if she knew anything about it, she said, no, I don't know anything about it, and she can go wherever she wants, but I'm staying here with you. So I was prepared for this, you know, ultimate court battle to make certain that, you know, she did not leave if she didn't want to. But the court made it very easy for me because at the time she was 9. By the time this is the divorce was final, her mom moved out of state. So the court basically looked at this young child who is very articulate, and they become the 800-pound gorilla. Whatever it is that they want, they get. And I was on the very fortunate end of this deal because she said, I want to be with Dad, and I want to live with him. And it never even went to court. So I de facto became the custodial parent of this child and remained as such until she was involved herself.
What was the involvement, Chris, of the mother at this time or through this period of time?
The involvement was toxic. She was attempting to undo everything I was doing. I mean, you kind of try to block it out of your mind. But just an example, I had enrolled her to continue in the same school where she was going. And just before she left the state, she removed her registration. So the school called me, 10 days before school is supposed to start, and says, well, we're sorry to see you go. And of course, I'm surprised that nobody is going anywhere. She is starting school, in 10 days. So that's an example of how things went. Unfortunately, if you do something like that and you do it to a child, children will be children for a very short period of time of their lives. Then they become adults, and some become adults sooner than or earlier than others. So her mother shot herself in the foot. Mm-hmm. It is unfortunate that because of that kind of mentality and that kind of treatment that she decided that that was her way of dealing with our daughter. She has had no real relationship with our daughter for the past 15 years, and it deteriorated to the point where when my daughter was married 2 years ago, almost to the day, her mother was invited and then was disinvited from the wedding because of that behavior. The two of them have not spoken since then. I would not wish that on my worst enemy. I don't know what that would feel like being on the other end, but it is what it is. The answer is, I guess you reap what you sow, and if that's what how it is that you decided to behave in the early years, there are things coming that you may not have expected, but they're there.
Right, and I think that one of the things now in society, and it's a fact of life. It's something we all have to deal with, and that is there is a lot of parents raising their children on their own. And one of the things that I love about your book is that it really helps anybody that's in that position to be able to see how it can be done in a positive way, how you can take, again, the same principles that you learned, as a businessman, and use those to raise your child. So what would you tell people out there that are listening that are, male or female, that are in a position now to where they are needing to raise their child and they're having to do that juggle? They have to make these decisions. On the one hand, I need to go to work. I have to make the money. I have to make the house payment and get the groceries. But at the same time, I want to raise my child to understand that they're loved, that they're cared about, And how can you, what would you tell somebody in that position now? How can they balance both of those things to raise a child like you've done?
Well, you're asking a very loaded question. So let me just try to take that apart and then piece it together. One of the things that any single parent ought to look at raising a child as a single parent is to look at that as an opportunity and not as a problem, not as a challenge. Will it be challenging? Of course it will be. But, raising a child in a nuclear family with two parents is a challenge. It is many, many times that to do it on your own. But on the flip side of that, you have all the benefits that come out of that, and children are exactly like computers. You upload data, and the data you download at some point is the very same relationship in quality of what it is that you uploaded. So we used to say garbage in, garbage out. Well, flip that around, and that's, gems in, gems out. So you want to feed your child with the confidence that they are going to want to have, with the belief in themselves, with believing that just because their own family is no longer a family of a mom and dad, the child's family does not have to be that way. You need to teach them that everything that they will do and everything they will get in this world is the direct result of how much time, effort, energy they put into it. And those are, I dare say, sometimes easier elements to do when you're doing them solo. And the reason for that is no two people can say the same thing the same way, but they can support it in a similar way. But oftentimes I have seen that parents almost cancel each other out. Somebody will say something positive and the other one, either willingly or unwillingly, will do something or say something that will cancel that positive out, making it, if not a negative, a zero, having no effect. Being a single parent, you have the the advantage of whatever it is that you're putting in there, nobody undoes it. But you also have the responsibility that it is now maximized, that you have to make certain whatever it is that you put in there is the right thing, because nobody else is going to go behind you and mop it up. So it's a double kind of thing. But answering your question earlier, where should a parent start? How can you balance life and business? Well, let me answer the second first. Is there a work-life balance? Well, yes, there is, but not at the same time. You cannot be at the office and be 50% dedicated to your child and 50% dedicated to work, and you cannot be at home and do the same 50-50. So when you're at the office, you're 100% at the office. When you're at home, you're 100% at home. And there is nothing in between. Your dedication is there 100% without exceptions. Perhaps the exception is, hey, you're at the office, your child gets sick, you got to go pick them up. Yes, that's a circumstance beyond your control. Or you're at home and you have some major thing due at work, and you may need to do some work at home. And I did do that, but I did it after I put her to bed. So my sleep suffered, but my time with her did not. But again, when you look at being a single parent, each single parent has to ask and answer this question of themselves. What kind of parent do I need to be, do I want to be, and what am I prepared to sacrifice to become that parent? And then things become very clear. And let's not forget that you're raising a child, but not really. You're raising an adult. If you have that as your mindset, a whole lot more things become clearer, because this child will be a child until the law tells you that a young person is a child, in most cases is age 18, but they're going to be an adult the rest of their life. So it makes sense to invest for the long term rather than for the first few years between now and when they turn 18.
Chris, you know, I really think you sound like a very fabulous father and parent, and we need more of that. Obviously, in America, it's one of those situations where the future is the young people of today, and obviously you have changed that person's life forever. I used to kind of say, people would say, well, you know, you did a good job raising your sons and such, and I said, well, you know, really, I think they did a better job of raising me along the way in some respects, because I wouldn't be the man I am today without that experience. And it sounds, how did you balance your personal life and relationships and the rest of emotional appeal with your daughter, obviously, and making sure that she was well taken care of in the interim?
Well, there were some certain things that I did. For instance, you know, I would drive her to school in the morning, and in the morning that commute was, I don't know, 25, 30 minutes. Her school, her day ended at 2:30 in the afternoon. Well, at 2:30 in the afternoon, no business person's day is at an end. In fact, it's probably just beginning. So I had hired someone to go pick her up and bring her to my office. She'll come to the office. I had a cubicle set up for her, so she actually got there, did her homework, did whatever needed doing, had a snack, and then when time came to go home, we went home. That, incidentally, was the only time that I remember leaving the office sometime between 5:30 and 6 o'clock. I was always a person before that, and certainly after that, that I left when my day was over, and running my own business, I pretty much had to walk away at some point that I felt it's time to go home rather than, you know, my work is done. So, but it was important to me to go home with her, that she actually feels that now it's 6 o'clock or so, and we're there, and we are we're going to prepare dinner, and this is family time. And she finished her homework, and of course, you know, that's in the early years, and maybe we'll watch a little television or whatever, and then we'll I'll put her to bed and read her book, and she'll go to sleep, and then start all over from the beginning. Okay. So it was you reach out and you take the other villagers that it takes to raise that person, because it does take a village. But that those villagers can be found everywhere and anywhere. All you have to do is just be alert enough and intuitive enough to be able to see them, identify them, and allow them to help you.
Now, Chris, you mentioned about having her come to your office and having her own cubicle. How valuable do you think that was from the standpoint of her understanding what it is that you do and establishing an ethic, like a work ethic, understanding that this is something that people do to further themselves?
This is probably one of those huge advantages that I never planned, but I did receive, because when she finished college, actually it was toward the end of her senior year in college, she started interning at a company and then got a full-time job within that company, and 6 years later she is one of the most senior employees there, and she is incredibly successful. And her work ethic, she credits me for seeing that. I think that while I'm humbled by receiving that credit, I think that much of it is nature and much of it is nurture, and she obviously had some of that inside her, but I am certain that seeing me work there and the way I work, it did not hurt. What also helped a great deal is watching my interaction with my employees, mm-hmm. because that formulated an idea of how she should be treated as an employee. That being an employee, you need, demand, and give respect. You work hard and you expect to be compensated fairly. You do X and you receive Y. So those are the kinds of things that I think she, as a sponge, she absorbed without me ever telling her anything. And then 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, I started hearing them playing back as she started hiring people and, you know, making her case for her own advancement within her company and so on and so forth.
Well, we're going to take a break, but Chris, we really just love what it is that you've done so far, you know, in regards to sharing with us about this. But for those that are listening, if you're sitting at a computer, as long as you're not driving, if you want to follow along with us, if you want to see where you can get the book, go to www.chris, and I'm going to spell this, it is EFESSIOU.com. If you go to that site, open up another window, you can see the book, you can see what we're talking about. And while you're doing that, we're going to take a break. We will be right back, so stay with us on Answers for the Family. Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And you're back with Answers for the Family.
And the book that we are talking about today is called Chief Daddy Officer, The Business of Fatherhood. Chris, before we went to break, you were talking a little bit about how you weren't taking credit for it, but how this really has also been a blessing as far as the bringing her to your work. It's been a blessing in the sense that she has this great work ethic, that she's now passed on some of the same things she's learned from you in watching you interact with your employees. You now see it in her. I think that is just phenomenal. And this is coming from someone, for those that out there that know, you know, I work with at-risk youth, and many of these kids that we're transporting, we talk to them about, you know, how things are going in their family. And unfortunately, in so many instances, what I get from those kids are they have absolutely no idea. They have no idea what their parents do. They have no idea where the money comes from. And it's actually very sad. And I can think of a particular boy that I had asked. I think I was in the Chicago area. And I asked him in regards to something in regards to his father. And he said, I have no idea what my father does. He says, all I know is he goes to some big building and he pays the bills. That's all that boy knew about his father. And that's all the relationship he seemed to have with him. So that to me is why it's important that, you know, you're putting out a book like this, that you're sharing with people, that there is a balance. There is something that we can all put together and balance our work life and our home life so that our children do feel valued. And as you said, they get that extra bonus to where they get a work ethic.
So, Chris, you know, when I was later on, when my boys were older, I was talking with him one time, and I used to give seminars at night after work. And many times it'd be 2 or 3 hours, and then I'd come home. I had a nanny that kind of helped them out and fed them and helped them with their homework and that type of thing. So tell me a little bit, was there anything that your daughter didn't understand about you throughout this lifetime? In other words, that she didn't really, because my boys came to me one time and said, oh, Dad, we thought you were out dating every night. And the reality was I was really out working and trying to bring home the bacon, so to speak, because that's what I did for a living. I was a national speaker and I'd go give talks to different companies. And was there any of that experience that your child really didn't understand who you were or what you were doing?
Yes and no. The potential for her having questions as to the rest of my life was always there. So, and I knew that she was very bright, and I knew that if there was a question I didn't want to answer, I'd better ask an answer at first. Because coming from her was going to be that much more difficult. And so when time came for me to date, I did make it known that, you know, I'm going out on a date. And whenever it is that that was a person that, you know, I thought of seriously, I would introduce her to her. I believe for on balance, it helped more than not, because she obviously always knew what I was. I wasn't going to say I'm staying late at the office and, you know, I'm and being out on a date. And back in those days, you could actually do that because, you know, the cell phones had just started to come about. We had car phones, but not necessarily cell phones. And, you know, most switchboards will shut off at after 6 p.m. or 7 p.m. So I could always call her, but if I wanted to avoid a call, I could do that. I never chose to do that for any number of reasons, but the most important one was that she needed to have access to me, and I wanted, when that time came for her to date and for her to be out on her own, I wanted that access to her. And I knew that I could demand nothing more than what it is that I offer. And therefore, I showed by way of example that I'm your dad and I'm 30 years older than you are, and I give you the right and the respect to notify you of whatever it is that I am, within reason, of course,
right,
with so that you don't worry. I expect the same kind of communication from you when you're out with your friends. And that started to, I used something that was potentially negative to turn it into a positive thing. It was nothing short of, at least at the beginning, walking on eggshells to have a dad parenting singly a daughter.
Right.
And I can tell you that if you ever took your 10, 11-year-old daughter to get her first bra, that's a very humbling experience.
I had two daughters, actually three daughters. I've been married twice, but all stepdaughters, not my biologics. But it was an experience that was kind of unusual, and they'd ask you some interesting questions. And then obviously the hormones would kick in at a particular age, and that was always an interesting ride. With two of them anyway, the other one seemed to be pretty basic with it. But so there were questions, and her mom on the first two girls, their mom really didn't seem to be as available to them as many times as I was in some of those questions. Even though I think they were a little sensitized by asking me, but you know, I would try and give them the best answer I knew at the time.
And that's all you can ask for, and you touched on a very important subject, and that is the availability. Many professionals, many moms and dads feel like their professional success is a direct competition with their parenting or their life outside of work. There is absolutely no reason why one cannot be a top-flight professional while at the same time being a loving, always emotionally available, and physically available whenever possible parent to their children. And so the emotional connection is what really carries the day. I have been on the other end of the world, and there is a story that is in the book. I was in Thailand when, you know, my daughter's boyfriend broke up with her while she was in college. So there's this girl with a heartache and everything else. And, you know, she calls me, 14-hour time difference between the two countries. And I excuse myself from a meeting, and I find myself in a hotel bathroom talking to her to, you know, providing an ear. Mm-hmm. Was that the kind of thing that I was looking forward to? No. But is that the kind of thing that buys you the belief that you're there for your child? It absolutely does. There's nothing that I could have told her, hey, I'm here for you, that was not outdone instantly by the fact that I was there for her in action.
Right.
So it is the emotional connection that carries the day. It's not the physical connection. And I can tell you, I'm sure you all have seen it, your listeners have seen it, there is nothing sadder than to have a parent and a child sitting on the same couch, watching the same television program, and having no connection with one another, feeling like they live in two different continents. And we've all experienced that. But whether you get there or not is a large part depending on the parent, and a smaller part depending on the child. But you cannot blame your child and leave yourself out of it.
Right. And what I hear you saying is, back up what you say. You know, it's one thing to tell your children, I'm there for you. It's another thing, 14-hour time difference, you know, to answer the phone and to go into, you know, the bathroom and walk out of a meeting that you know, may have, you know, had huge business benefit, but making sure that your child understood whatever it was I was doing was not as important as what it is that you need me for, I think is just beautiful. And we have a listener email that is coming across. They've got a question, And this question reads, my brother, who owns and operates a chain of auto repair shops, lost his wife last year to breast cancer. Our parents have been a godsend in helping to care for his two children, ages 14 and 17. Unfortunately, they are moving back to Oklahoma mid-2014, and he will be on his own. He is a terrific businessman, which is why your interview on Alan's show caught my attention. Can you explain how your book might help him set up the structure he will need after our parents leave?
Yes, and condolences to her brother for the loss of his wife. That is an awful thing. But again, he needs to act like the mom and the dad. And even though the parents are helping to take care of the kids, and obviously they're going to move away, his function as being the parent never diminishes. Whether he is, wherever it is that he is located, even if the children were to be located elsewhere, that will never diminish. How is it that he can have that connection? The connection has to be emotional, and it has to be the emotional availability. He needs to have his children know that no matter where it is and what time it is, you know, what the situation is, that his phone line is always available to them. Use technology in the way that technology can be used to help people. Way back then, it was just the phone. Now, now every person, if you don't have an iPhone, you have a smartphone, and most phones have the ability to have FaceTime, or you can Skype with one another from your phone and everything else. Have that FaceTime. Have your child see you once a day, whenever it is that it's possible. When you know that they have, you know, a test, and that test is at 9 o'clock in the morning, at about 8:30, shoot them a text message and saying, honey, I'm thinking of you. Good luck. I know you're going to do great. Your son has a sports meet, soccer, tennis, whatever, and you know that that's important to him. Shoot him a text about half hour before that and say, thinking about you, you're going to do great. I'm proud of you, and so on and so forth. Think back to you. How would you have felt if your own mother or father sent you such a message? It would have put you on a different plane. It would have boosted you up, because not because they are there, but because they are inside of you. They are emotionally there. They are telling you, I'm thinking of you. And that, to me, is the biggest connection. It's the thing that costs no money, and it's the thing that carries the day. But it does take time, and it does take thought. And depending on what your brother's current relationship is with his children, it appears that it is a very close, loving relationship. That should not be an issue. And sooner rather than later, your brother is going to realize that he is getting the same kind of texts from his children at the beginning of his day, at the close of his day, at times of his life when something important is happening to him. And I'm not here to advocate for any kind of, you know, wireless carrier to jack up their text minutes. I'm here to advocate to take any and every avenue available to you and yours to make that a positive connection. And if today that's text and Skype and FaceTime, terrific. If tomorrow it's Google Glasses, then great. Whatever it is, use everything available to you to minimize that distance. The point is, if somebody feels emotionally connected with you, the distance is going to fade away.
Chris, I remember the days that I'd take my, it always seemed that I'd take my one son on Saturday over to the one side of town and then take the other one over to the other side of town for the soccer games. And then I'd go pick the other son up and bring him back over and watch the final game with the, but I was always in a car moving back and forth, and it always seemed they were across town. Did you have parental support from your parents? Were they alive at the time?
No, my parents, both of my parents were alive at the time. My dad has since passed away, but I've had their emotional support, but not physical support. My entire family lives in Greece, which is where I'm from.
Okay.
I'm the only one from my family in the States. And so that was very much the kind of thing that I had to manage on my own.
So you were all alone pretty much in the raising of this daughter?
Yes. Yes. Whatever arrangements I had to make, I had to make them on my own. But it isn't. Is it easier to have family around you? Of course it is. I mean, you can rely on someone, and you can depend on someone. But at the same time, not having the family, having to do everything on your own, even though it gets to be daunting at times, it isn't an insurmountable task. It takes a little bit of planning, or a lot of planning, and it takes advanced planning. You cannot, unlike having family nearby where you can say, well, I'm going to work late tonight, can you take care of my daughter, feed her dinner or whatever, and I'll be home in an hour. That may be a quick fix on things, but in the long run, that day where she was going to have lunch or dinner with grandma and grandpa would have been a dinner that I would not have had with her. Having done it my way, I was able to kind of have my cake and eat it too, if you will. But it did take a lot of work.
Now, Chris, in the book, one of the things that I recalled was that you say that, as a CEO, you have to mentor your team. That's one of the things that we learn, any of us who have run a business. How did you apply that at home as well?
Well, the team is an interesting concept. The concept of the team is any two or more members of a union become a team. So my daughter and I were a team. You can have a family of six children, and the two parents, they're a team of eight. So it's not in the numbers. What it is in the belief. And anytime a person feels a part of a team, they feel like they have shared interests. They feel that they have shared goals and shared outcomes. So if we want to accomplish something, let's call it X, that accomplishment, I need to put something in it, and you need to put something in it. Maybe not in equal parts, but we both are going to do our share to get there. A team or a family is not generated, the unity is not generated by sharing DNA or by living under the same roof. It happens by nurturing the other person, by knowing what is important to them, by doing what's important to them, and by telling them constantly that they matter and that they are an important member of that team, that things would not happen if they were not there. Lo and behold, at the end, they pull their weight in spades. I think we've all seen it in business. I think we have all seen brilliant people sit on their hands and not be able to find their way out of a bag because they could not think in anything but a singular person doing a singular task, and that's a loner, that's a solo flyer. It's all good, but it doesn't make a team. And we have also seen people who almost by nature know how to talk to people, know how to motivate them, and know how to draw them in. If you are naturally a person that does that, terrific. Most of us are not. Most of us have to learn it. And I can assure you that it is one of those elements that once you learn it, it will be with you for the rest of your life. And it's probably one of the best things you'll ever learn, because once you learn it, then you teach it time and time again. And that is what causes it to proliferate and to get bigger and bigger, helping other people.
Chris, you have chosen your team at work, and you're obviously the leader. How do you get your people to follow you in that circumstance, kind of like your daughter? Does that come together?
Yeah. a little bit differently, but not that much differently. I mean, you know, when you have a team of people at work, you obviously have to communicate what it is that you need to do, and you have to involve them in the decision-making process. Everybody has a voice when we are trying to decide what it is that we need to do. At the end, a decision is made, and that decision will be made by me based on what it is that I feel and what it is that I have heard from everybody else. Now, we all know one decision, when you have 100 people, one decision is not going to be accepted by all 100. In fact, if it gets accepted by 99, you're doing something right. So the key there that I found for having people to give you the buy-in and to follow your lead is not whether or not you choose their idea. It is whether or not you ask the question and you solicit their input. If a person feels they have had a voice in the decision-making process, even if that final decision was not what they were supporting, they feel satisfied that at least I was heard. As opposed to, hey, that's not my idea, I'm not following it. That is not an option that anybody can tolerate in a business environment. But to tell you the truth, I never really had to resort to that. I did what I felt it was the right thing to do for everyone in the company, top to bottom.
Chris, that's always a good situation when you're doing what's right and you've got a flow of that nature. But what happens when the navigating gets a little difficult on stormy waters, and what do you do in a crisis situation?
You need to, in a crisis situation is almost a better situation to show people what it is that you're made out of. And, you know, when I have an acronym that I call PLACE, P-L-A-C-E, and that works at home and it works at work. Every time you have a situation where you're navigating rough waters, what it is that you have to go to that place and start with a P. P stands for planning. You have to plan, because if you don't have a plan, the waves are going to bounce you all over the place, and you're not going to know if you're looking east, west, north, or south. You're just going to know that you're not upside down. But that's not much. So you have to plan. You have to listen. That's what the L step stands for. Listen to your people. If something goes wrong, somebody would know either why it went wrong, what went wrong, or how to fix it. Or if they don't give you the solution, they will give you enough so you can take that and arrive at a solution. Then you go to letter A. That stands for act. You have to act. Nothing ever happens until somebody pulls some trigger. Whether that trigger is a sale, whether the trigger is, you know, throwing a switch, or whatever it is, action is required in order to have the rudder of that ship pointed in the direction that you want your ship to go. Communicate is the letter C. We have all known of a great many situations where something went wrong in a company, in an organization. The executives found themselves huddled in the executive suite or out in a retreat or something like that. Word went out to the masses that, you know, oh, things are not good, and the executives are thinking of what it is that they're going to solve the problem. But nobody predicts good results if they don't know anything about what it is that's happening. Because they don't know if the company is going bankrupt, they don't know if the production line has shut down, or if some supplies were delayed, and so you're going to be in a backorder situation. Well, there's a big, huge difference in between going out of business and going in a backorder situation. But people, absent true information, they're going to make up that information, make up their own, and act according to their own information. And so you lose your people, or you have other issues that you have to contend with, but all of which could have been avoided. The point is, communicate, communicate, communicate. Even if you have to tell them bad news coming from a caring person, will be understood, acted upon, and everybody's going to fall in line and make you help you get through that rough place. And
Chris,
then the last letter is E, that stands for evaluate. Whatever it is that you're doing, you're planning, you're listening, you're acting, you're communicating, evaluate where it is that you are. If you're going down the wrong path, you don't need to go 100 miles down that road to realize that you're going down the wrong path. You can know that in the first 5 miles. So putting all of that together, think about it the way it applies in life. It's exactly the same thing. You get divorced. You're in a situation. You are now a single father. You plan. How am I going to do this? I'm not going to wing it. It's too big a job to wing.
Yeah, and Chris, let me interject right now. Unfortunately, we have run out of time, and I just received an email that I want to read over the air before we go. And this one reads, at first glance, I thought the book was just for single dads, and I was going to recommend it to a single guy friend who is raising his daughter solo. After reading the reviews, I decided to buy it for myself, and I couldn't put it down. I can't wait to share it with several of my friends, married, single, female, and male. Thanks for writing such an amazing book for all of us trying to parent teens. This is from Joyce in Salt Lake City. Joyce, thank you so much for that comment. Chris, thank you so much for coming on the air. Craiger, thank you.
It was great being here with you today, Alan.
Yeah.
And Chris, thank you.
And Craiger, thank you for joining us.
Pleasure.
And for everybody out there, be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.